The following program is brought to you by your friends at TheForce.net.
Oh, Maxi bit the Force.
And RebelScum.com.
You Rebel Scum.
The galaxy is listening. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is a ForceCast Microcast.
Size matters not.
Brought to you by TheForce.net and RebelScum.com.
You may fire when ready.
Star Wars Cantina.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Chris, you went to school for the music biz and everything, and there's this story that Chris has told over and over again. Right. He's in some Irish bar crying into his beard. Oh, right. No more Star Wars coming out. And Courtney comes over and says, let's make a film. Now, I mean, where does Courtney pull let's make a film out? If you're concentrating on the music business, why doesn't she come to you and say, why don't you do a musical tribute to Star Wars? Where does film come from?
Good question.
That is a good question. For the longest time, I always wanted to get into the film business because, again, the internet had killed not only fan magazines, but it killed the music business. It really did. Around the same time, too, around 2000.
That's right.
And I always wanted to get out of that business of music and into the movie business. And, they're very similar, to some degree anyway. And for the longest time, I wanted to compose music for film. And I remember going to Frank Iario's birthday, his 40th birthday party.
Who's your cousin?
Yeah, it was my wife's cousin. Mm-hmm. It was my wife's cousin. And also
a film professional.
Oh, it's beyond film professional. He is the film professional. He's the guy that made this movie happen as well. And I remember going up to him. And we never talked about this story before. Like, when we were making The Force Among Us, I never reminded him about this story. But I went up to Frank and I said, Frank, I want to get into the movie business. And he goes, well, what do you want to do? I go, I'll do anything. He's like, when you figure it out, come and see me. And you know, that's the exact same thing that happened to me in the music business. When I was going to Columbia College, I remember meeting with some entertainment company. And they're like, well, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I'll do anything. And they're like, well, when you figure it out, come back, you know? And here I call Frank for advice. And I'm like, he's like, hey, I'm on board. Let's do this thing. He's like, you're going to direct it? I'll co-direct it with Court. And, you know, you guys write it. And you guys, this is your vision. And I'm going to put it on the screen for you. So, but why film?
Yeah. Where's it coming from? Is it the access to Frank?
You know, it was the access to Frank. It was the opportunity. It was the fact that I wanted to get into the movie business eventually. Mm-hmm. Why? Because I wanted to stay in entertainment, you know. And usually entertainment, I mean, there's a lot of different avenues, but it's music or film, really, you know. I think just because, you know, all those reasons, really, you know.
You know, I think what's just as amazing as that question of why would she say that and, you know, the audacity of just saying, you know, why don't you make a film? It's like, you know, oh, yeah, okay, maybe I will, you know?
I know, who's sitting
and then guess what? He did. He actually went out and did it.
It's like the American dream. You're sitting in a pub crying over your beer. You say, let's make a movie, and then here we are now.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it happened.
That's like all three of us sitting here going, well, what should we do now? Well, why don't you guys make a TV series? Well, okay.
Yeah.
Why don't you build a skyscraper?
Yeah, exactly.
But I think, you know, Star Wars is... You know, and I've told this story over and over again. We've heard this story over and over again from other people. But Star Wars was just so personal to me that it was almost fate that we were supposed to make this film to some degree. You know, there's got to be a reason why this hasn't been done before.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be a reason more than just it being a difficult thing to do.
Well, and now wait a minute, Eric. There is something more to it than that that's mysterious around this. Number one, your birthday is May 25th. And number two, Macht is German for force.
Right, right.
Come on.
A little bit of fate
involved. It's in the stars, man. I'm sorry, but you were, you know, destined to make this movie.
It is so. Your destiny.
Exactly. and the cool thing is that I get emails from fans all over the world saying, wow, what a great film about fandom.
Yes.
That was just a positive story. I related to that story. It's the Hallmark card for us fans. Yep. You know, happy 30th birthday, Star Wars fans. You know, it was just, so I, you know, it was very, it felt very good to satisfy the fans because Star Wars fans, I'm one of them. You're one of them. Mm-hmm. Jimmy, you're one of them.
I think so.
Yeah. Sometimes we get let down. There's, you know, sometimes things let us down if it's Jar Jar Binks or, you know, whatever. And
I'm still reeling from Jackson, the big green bunny rabbit from Marvel number 8. Oh, yeah. Jackson. Yeah. Whatever. So I was so ready for Jar Jar Binks after Jackson. It wasn't, you know? For you guys listening who don't know the old Marvel series from 1977-78, ran through till 85, I believe. The early issues featured, a couple of the early issues featured a big green bunny rabbit named Jackson who teamed up with Han Solo and Chewbacca and a bunch of other wacky characters.
Good God Almighty, I remember.
All of a sudden, Dan's like...
I remember looking at that going, what the hell are they talking about?
Some of those covers on those old comics, though, they were just so awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them were a little scary, though. You know, like, you know... Boba Fett was purple instead of his regular, you know, it was comic color.
It put you off a little bit.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know,
I do remember that.
But some of them were so classic. Actually, in the early 90s, Star Wars things were so hard to get. And I started, like, hanging my comics on the wall in their plastic bags mm-hmm. with a thumbtack, mm-hmm. you know, just because it was something cool to look
sure.
at, you know. We didn't have all the action figures in the store, you know?
Geez, you took me down memory lane when you mentioned that green rabbit. I forgot. I completely forgot about that.
He was on the cover, actually, wasn't he?
Jackson!
And I was happily forgetting him until this moment. Now you reminded me of that.
He's going to come and haunt you in your sleep.
I'll be dreaming about him tonight.
So we were talking about, though, you were talking about Jar Jar Binks, and I made the connection between Jackson, which took us off into a tangent that was like...
Well, you know, the fans have been let down from time to time, but we become so critical of things. I'm like, how am I going to satisfy Star Wars fans, you know? But the fact that I'm one of them, I think, helped. And the film has been, you know, a lot of people have had a lot of great things to say about it.
And it added credibility to the film, too, the fact that you are a Star Wars fan. I mean, if you'd just been some guy... some documentary filmmaker that wanted to make a movie about Star Wars fans, I don't think it would have had as much credibility as the fact that you are a fan. So you come from the universe in which you're talking about.
Right.
And also you bring exposure to certain aspects of the Star Wars fan community, which might not have had that exposure before.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
I mean, I learned things. Well, I didn't know there was an art collector out there that collected $50,000 worth of art, or a Lego collector. You know, that made custom Legos. I had
right.
no idea.
Right, absolutely.
I had no idea. So it was a learning experience for me, you know?
Yeah.
Just learning more about fans.
And you got a trip to Norway on top of it.
Yeah. That was
wild.
Nice.
That's cool.
Wild. And you've talked about that in depth, so I mean, we don't really need to go into that too much.
We've talked about all this in depth.
And there's a lot of extras on the DVD, which, of course, I'm going to tell people how to get. You got to go to the Force... theforceamongus.com, and you could purchase a copy of this incredible DVD with all the extras, with the commentary, even a live Force cast featuring our own Jason and Pete and Chris Macht and Dan Madsen and the lovely Courtney Macht out at Star Wars Celebration 4 in Los Angeles.
Okay.
That was a pleasant treat to see that on the DVD.
I was wondering if I was going to get a lawsuit from you guys. Because I never asked Jason and Pete for permission.
They're sending you a cease and desist letter
right.
as we seek.
Right. We got some O.J. Simpson's old lawyers.
Right.
We got a whole new dream team coming after you.
I think I remember asking you and you, Jimmy, and you're like, no, they don't care. They'll love to be part of the film. And we try to get you in the film, and I'm like, you made the film after all. You know, you know, one thing I didn't get a chance to talk about was the music.
I was just going to ask you about that because, of course, you know, I was leaning down that path because you did go to school for music management. You are a musician. You play drums. You play guitar. You surround yourself with musicians, it seems like, on a daily basis. It's your business. It's your livelihood. And obviously, the music of The Force Among Us is something that was very personal to you and something you took great care in the placement of the music and the mix of the music. So let's talk about that. For starters, let's talk about the bands that you included and why these specific bands. How does this music, which really has nothing to do with Star Wars, bring the whole film together?
Well, I think it's the feeling that the music gives.
Yeah.
You know, the emotion that it gives.
Good answer.
I think that's what it's all about. You know, it's like, you know, when Mikey, my cousin Mike, was ranting and raving about Jar Jar Binks, we used a rock band from Detroit called the Mugs.
Yes.
And it was more aggressive, you know, and it fit right, you know?
What's nice about that sequence, and it jumped out to me even in the 15-minute trailer that you debuted at Star Wars Celebration 4 in your wildly successful panel.
That was awesome.
That room was packed.
That was packed.
Amazing.
That will never be relived.
No, I don't think so.
That was over the top.
That was totally over the top.
But what I noticed about the way the music builds, the Mugs, along with Mike's dialogue, the more intense he gets, the more intense the music gets, the drive in the music, and it just kind of brings it all home, you know?
Yes, and I think that's what it's all about. It doesn't have to necessarily be John Williams' music, you know, but the emotion has to be there, the emotion in the music.
Well, you know, what's funny is that if you had played me that music separate from the movie and said, what do you think? You think this should go in the movie? I'd probably listen to that and said, well, maybe, I don't know. But it really does work, because when I watch the movie and I hear the music, it's like, it works.
Right.
I don't know why it works, but it works.
I mean, there was a lot of thought put into the music. I mean, the Mugs have a full-length CD, and I picked that song,
yeah.
You know, that song out of all of them.
Yeah.
And how it really began was, you know, going back to my dream about composing music for film, I'm like, wow, here's a chance to finally compose the music. But I was smart enough to know that my musical talent was mediocre, especially compared to Frank's production work. You know, I'm like, there's no way my music is going to be good enough to put into Frank's production quality of the film.
Well, and without selling yourself short, too, that's a huge burden to put on your shoulders alongside with the production and direction of a full-length film.
Man. Oh, yeah.
I mean, well, taking the you know, you're trying to put this film together on top of doing your own music for it. We'd still be waiting for it, Chris.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's when it came down to the fact that, you know, right, we were going to do the music all the way up until I had arranged some musicians to perform the soundtrack with me. And it got to the point where right before Norway, I'm like, you know what? I'm tired. I'm burnt out. There's no way I'm going to be able to compose. Because when you compose music, it takes a lot of creativity.
Oh, yeah. I've never done it, so you know, I can't even imagine how much work it would be to do something like that.
So when you get so far, you're just like, man, there's nothing left of me creatively, because it went all to the film, you know?
Right.
And then I started thinking about the time and the money and the energy, and you're right, we still would be, you know, I mean, that's not only am I making a movie, but now I'm making an album.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something that I always wanted to do, but it was just so much work, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I made a movie instead.
Yeah, hey.
And, you know, I started thinking, I'm like, you know, there's some bands out there that are independent and they have record deals, but they're not controlled by the corporate music world, you know, and they have control of their music. And I, you know, I saw one of the bands that contributed 24 songs to the score was Drums and Tuba, a band that's actually on Ani DeFranco's label, who Ani is a very, very big artist that pretty much made, you know, formed her own label, signed all the bands. And I had contacted them because I had seen them open up for Primus.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just so blown away by the atmospheric sound that they were creating. And I'm thinking, that would be pretty cool to get these guys in the film, you know? Because I was looking for music that also had ambiance,
yeah,
you know?
Right.
Mood music, if you will. And they also had a vintage sound to them as well, you know? So I called him up and I emailed him. He's like, hey, man, you can use all the music you want. And so they were you know, they were a done deal. The mugs I worked with in Detroit New Year's Eve, and I was blown away by them. And I started listening to their CD all the time. Katie Todd from Chicago. Again, these are people that just clicked when I saw them, you know. And Brant Bjork, he was in Caius and Fu Manchu, and now he's solo. He has a very 70s rock sound. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Star Wars is from the 70s.
There you go. Know?
And I contacted Brant Bjork's people, and they got back to me, and they're like, Brant went to the website. Mm-hmm. And he digs the vibes, cool. You know, of the website. So I'm like, okay, he's a star. And the guy
that's
goes,
even cool.
The guy goes, he's a Star Wars fan too, you know. And that's when I played you that song today, Dan. That song, Native Tongue. It starts off with In a Galaxy,
in
far,
a galaxy far, far away.
And when I found out that he had written that lyric, I'm like, okay,
that's
this weird. Is perfect. Yeah, this is weird. This is perfect. So,
really, In a galaxy far, far away.
Yes,
that's the way the lyrics start.
That's the way the lyric starts. Yeah. That was a song called The Native Tongue, and I wanted to use that, but it was very expensive because it was a new song of his, and, you know, I didn't want to spend all the budget on one song, you know? So I would listen to the music over and over and over again, you know? And I finally came to a point where I started lining up the shots in my mind with the music that I was listening mm-hmm. to. And I went into the studio, I went into the editing room, and Fred Seba, who worked with Frank as a partner, Freddie was the music guy. And I'm like, Frank, just let me do this. And we sat down, we played the whole entire final edit, and I'm saying, okay, play, I have my iPod, I'm like, play The Mugs track number one, started at 1:15. And he started at 1:15, I'm like, cut it at 1:32. And he's like, oh, my God. You know? And I did it with, like, 24 songs.
Yeah, you were set to go.
Yeah. And then, yeah. I mean, we put the music in there, and we did it in one shot. And, I mean, it was a process where it was like I was eating it, sleeping it. I mean, it was constantly going through my head, you know?
Did thoughts of George Lucas run through your head as you were putting this together with your blood, sweat, and tears? Did you think of George as he was putting together the original Star Wars in the early 70s?
The thing I thought about was when George Lucas almost had a heart attack when filming episode 4, you know, and I understand why he didn't want to direct, you know, Empire and Jedi.
Right.
Because he almost lost his life over it.
Yeah,
you know? And I totally thought of him. But I think I thought of Kirshner more in Norway than I did Lucas, because it was going to a set that Kirshner had told so many stories of.
Right.
You know? But I thought about the hardship that Lucas went through, you know, for sure, mm-hmm. while making the first Star Wars movie.
And you've talked about this before, running into Kirshner in L.A. and being able to ask him about filming in Norway. That must have just brought everything all around for you, you know? I mean, here you are crossing the finish line, and you're talking to a guy about filming in Norway who actually filmed in Norway.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that was full circle. That was full circle for sure. But my attitude, it's going to kill me. My attitude is always like, okay, talk to Irvin Kirshner. What's next? You know? Yeah. And I was telling Frank, I said, if we can get into Celebration 4, that's the golden ticket. And then after C4, it's like, okay, now we got to do this. And Frank's like, how many gold tickets are we going to go up there?
Well, you know, you had the greatest experience out there at Celebration 4, exposing people to your film. And exactly. we just mentioned minutes ago how the panel you guys did was a huge success, and a lot of people were there and really dug what they saw.
Yeah, it was the last day, the last hour. And all the fans that wanted more, that didn't want Celebration to end. And me and Glenn have always closed out all the celebrations, you know. Yeah. Celebration is now over and the lights go off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, all right, we got to leave, you know. And I was relating to the crowd and the audience, and it was just cool to be
have them there.
Yeah,
you're right. There, a lot of them didn't want it to be over.
No.
Dan, when you, of course, are the man who's generally given the title of being responsible for the original Celebration.
Yeah.
Did that come out of your brain?
Well, actually, let's see. How did that come about? Actually, it actually came from a phone call from Steve Sansweep about a year before. Actually, it was our idea to begin with, now that I recall. We said that this should be some sort of a Star Wars convention. Steve Sansweet said they were going to think about it. It kind of took him a while. Finally, he made a call back to us and said, you know, we've decided that we think it would be a good idea to do the fan club, to do a convention. And he said, you know, we think the fan club should be the ones to do it because, you know, it seems like the logical place. And we said, you know, okay. And I remember thinking I was a little bit daunted because I'd never run a convention in my life. I never had any concept of how to do it. And we had about 8 months to put it all together. You know, we weren't given a, you know, over a year to plan it. So we had to start immediately. And we were talking about something massive because, you know, prior to that, the last time there had been an official Lucasfilm Star Wars convention was the 10th anniversary one in L.A.
Right.
So it was quite a long time. So, and we realized, you know, that by this point, you know, the buildup to episode one was amazing. Everybody's just getting pumped and pumped and pumped, ready for it. So within 8 months, we had to put this whole thing together. A lot of issues, a lot of politics. We looked, tried to get our convention center booked. It was booked out way long before that. 8 months was not enough time. So we looked and looked and looked. We could not find one. We found the Wings Over the Rockies Air and Space Museum in Denver, but it wasn't going to be big enough to house the whole thing. So we realized we're going to have to build our own kind of little village with these kind of permanent tent-type structures outside where the main stage would be and such. And we had to hope and pray that we wouldn't have nasty weather.
And what happened?
And we had the worst rain, literally. And I'm not exaggerating.
It was like Woodstock.
It was. Well, you know, funny thing you say that. It was the worst rain in 100 years.
Yeah, Anthony really Daniels was sitting in the chair you're sitting in right now a couple days ago, and he told me it rained like he'd never seen rain before. And this cat is from England.
Absolutely right.
It rains every day.
Two solid days. I can remember I kept saying, you know, praying for no rain. And I remember, you know, waking up that Saturday morning or that Friday morning, actually the first day of the event, looking out the window. And I mean, it wasn't just, you know, dribbling. It was just coming down like cats and dogs. And I was just absolutely devastated. And, you know, we have to do the best we can with it. You know, we had no choice at that point. So we went forward with the whole thing. And, you know, it turned out to be actually a good event in the long run. There were lines like there had been, but, you know, no, we'd never had experience with running a convention before. So we did the best we could with what we had. You know, I still get letters to this day from people saying they how much they remembered it. And when I've talked with Rick McCallum about it many times, and Rick said, you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world, because he said all these people were standing in the rain and the mud, and he said it built their camaraderie. And he said it was, and he was the one, I think, that coined the phrase, said this is like their Star Wars Woodstock.
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's pretty cool. If right now there are people who are, you know, upset about the rain and all the mud and everything, but, you know, 12, 15, 25 years from now, people look back at that and will have fond memories of standing in the rain and the mud,
don't,
you know, waiting for it.
Don't drink the brown milk.
Exactly.
Okay. That's half Star Wars, half Woodstock.
Exactly.
And we were teasing Chris earlier that he had to make a movie about Star Wars or Star Wars fans or something like that, because the only other movie he'd probably want to make is one about Woodstock. And hello, that's already been done.
I think you should make a movie about the connections between Star Wars Celebration 1 in Woodstock.
Right. Wow.
There you go.
But it was a huge attendance.
We had over 30,000 people at the first Star Wars Celebration. And the thing that a lot of people don't know about is that 2 weeks prior to the event, the Columbine shootings happened. And Anthony Daniels was in town at that point. He had come in 2 weeks earlier to work with me to help develop the show and everything. And so we were there, and I remember us sitting in a restaurant and watching the TV, seeing that, when I remember us both looking at each other and going, oh no, because we thought Lucasfilm's not going to want to do this here in Denver now. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, the very next day, we got a call from Jim Ward, the head of marketing at Lucasfilm, and he says, we've talked about it with George, and he thinks that it's not appropriate to be putting on a celebration in Denver so soon after this terrible, terrible, I mean, you know, that, as you all maybe remember, I mean, that affected the whole country.
Oh yeah.
But imagine being in Denver where it happened.
Right.
And we said, you know, this thing has to keep going on. What a terrible thing to let these guys do this tragedy to the city and to these families. But then to disappoint all of these people on top of that is like giving them more credence. It's like, you know, saying, yeah, and look at this other evil thing you did now. Now you canceled all of this for all these fans that were coming to Denver to celebrate this thing they love. And so we got right on the phone with Lucasfilm, and I mean, we spent literally 2 days, and I'm not exaggerating, 2 days off and on the phone with them, trying to explain to them why we thought it was a bad idea to cancel the event, why it would be just giving, you know, more ammunition to these horrible guys that did this. We went to the mayor of Denver. He wrote a letter to Lucasfilm saying, this is the thing that Denver needs, the shot in the arm. We need to get our mind off of this. In 2 weeks, we don't want to be sitting here, you know, just going over and over this terrible tragedy. And so they wrote a letter to Lucasfilm. And Anthony and I spent 2 days on the phone trying to convince them to not cancel it. And at the end of the day, we did it. And they decided to go forward with the event. And it turned out to be a great thing. We raised money. We raised thousands of dollars for the Columbine victims and their families. At the same time, we gave...
That was cool. I remember. It's like for every dollar you put in...
Lucasfilm would match it.
And all the sponsors would.
Exactly,
and,
right.
Pepsi and Lego and whoever else.
I don't remember what the total was, but I mean, it was, you know, over $20,000. And we made little ribbons that everybody wore on their shirts. Yeah. In memory of the...
I think I still have mine.
And at the opening event of the convention, they asked me to come out and ask for a moment of silence. So the first thing I did was walk out, welcome everybody, and then ask for a moment of silence for the Columbine victims. And what's eerie about that is that one of the kids that was shot and killed, his parents told us that he was a huge Star Wars fan, and he was planning on coming to the event.
Wow.
And so that brought it home for us, that one of these kids was actually planning on being at the event.
Wow. And good for you for taking it back to Lucasfilm and not just lying down and saying, okay, we won't do it.
Yeah.
Because now it's your legacy.
Yeah.
There's been Star Wars Celebration 2, 3, 4. There's talk about 5. We know it's going to happen. This is something that's going to be, you know, a biannual thing, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And it could have died right then and there in the hallways of Columbine if you didn't stand up.
Well, and I have to give credit to Anthony Daniels, too, because really Anthony fought for it. He really believed heart and soul that this event had to continue to go on. And so he really fought for it. And, you know, at the end of the day, it was interesting because on the second day of the event, Jim Ward walked into me. I remember it like day. And I was sitting at the event, and Gordon Radley, who was then the president of Lucasfilm, had flown out for the event, and Gordon walked through the whole thing and just absolutely thought it was great. He loved what he saw, and at the end of the day, he came to Jim and said, I'm really glad we went forward with this, that we didn't cancel it. And Jim walked in and looked at me and said, you're not going to believe what Gordon just told me. And he said, Gordon said, you know, he called George, and they were both saying, thank God we went forward with the event, that it was a great thing, and, you know, we're glad we didn't cancel it. And he just came up and gave me a big hug. And it was really an emotional moment because we'd gone through so much up to that point. And then on top of all of that, we were dealing with this nonstop rain outside.
Right.
It was just like, you know, at that point, and I got tears in my eyes, and I remember he kind of welled up because he knew we'd gone through so much to get to that point. And it was vindication that we'd done the right thing to hold our guns and say, no, it really needs to happen.
That's fantastic, and it just kind of ties in with Star Wars. It just seems like whenever they're trying to do something new for Star Wars, whether it be create the franchise with the original Star Wars, A New Hope, or bring it back with the prequels, Episode 1, or Star Wars Celebration, it seems like weather always does something historic to try and ruin the Star Wars and the original Star Wars. Biggest storm Tunisia has seen in 50 years.
That's true.
Episode 1, biggest storm to be seen since the last storm.
Yeah.
From 1975.
And Norway, they had a huge storm.
Yeah, Norway was like a Denver storm.
Yeah.
It was like the coldest winter they've had in 100 years.
I've never made that connection, but that's actually, you're right. There is that connection within that.
It snowed at Celebration 3 when everybody was outside.
Outside freezing, waiting in line.
What
in
the
April.
Hell?
It doesn't
April.
Snow in April. You know, well, it did that then.
Exactly right.
That's crazy.
That's very true.
So, Dan, Star Wars Celebration is your big legacy. Chris, your big project and your big legacy, of course, is The Force Among Us, which, if I didn't tell everyone before, I think I did, but I'll tell them again. It's available at theforceamongus.com. What's next for you? You've done the convention circuit to death. You've gotten a lot out of it.
That's how I feel.
Oh yeah,
exactly. Like that.
You know, I'll never forget.
Death warmed over.
I'll never forget when I talked to you guys at Wizard World Chicago, and I said, "How you feeling?" And Court stepped up, and she goes, "We feel good. Christian's tired." And I looked at you, and you were kind of hunched on a table there, like, "Hurry up with this interview, son. Let's get moving." But so, what's next for you? Where do we go next with The Force Among Us?
Well, going back to Court, she said that she's done following me on some damn fool I dissed the crusade. Well, yeah, I've done so many dates. I feel like I've done more dates than some of the Star Wars celebrities. You know, it's just, I guess when you're independent and you have a movie that, you know, you're distributing yourself, you just have to keep hacking away at it. But, you know, it is time to say goodbye to the fan circuit for sure, you know. Not goodbye to the fans, but to, you know, wrap up the convention circuit. We've done so many. I picked Dan up from the airport, and Dan's like, "How you feeling?" I'm like, "Revived." And that was a day before yesterday. And now I feel like a dish rag, you know, a dirty dish rag. So it's time to wrap it up, you know. And it's time to hit the film festival circuit and to hopefully seek out some distribution deals, you know. You gave me that encouraging story about Ringers. They didn't get into Sundance, but they went to this body.
It's called Slam Dance.
Slam Dance, yes. Yeah. And Sony picked them up. You know.
Yep.
So I'm gonna do that. And me and Dan were. This is kind of an exclusive interview part right here.
Ooh, scoop.
Exclusive.
Me and Dan were having lunch today, and we were talking and. I always get the question, what's next? What's next? You know, and it's like, well, the film festival circuit. But really, what's next? And I'm thinking we have 20 hours worth of Norway footage.
Wow.
20 hours.
And that's, to me, and a lot of people I talk to, that's their favorite part of the film.
Yes.
Not to belittle any other part of it.
And I said the same thing to him.
You know, not to belittle Dan's part.
No. Are you calling me a little?
You know, so... We have 20 hours worth of footage. We don't have to pay to go there because we have it all in the can. And we have so many stills. And I wanted to make The Force Among Us 2, but that just sounds so exhausting.
Mm.
It does. The Force Among Us 2.
Yeah.
So Dan was saying, man, it's a no-brainer. You have all this footage, you know? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, we need to make a documentary about Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And who would we interview? Well, we've been in talks with Irvin Kershner.
Kersh, obviously.
You know, what's coming up? The 30-year anniversary of Empire Strikes Back, you know?
Wow.
Brought to you from the makers of The Force Among Us.
Sweet.
Like a natural.
Yeah.
You know, so we're really thinking about expanding on the Norway project, you know?
And, why not?
Why not? I mean, 20 hours worth of footage. And I think you were saying, too, that why have that film footage sit on a shelf?
Well, where the fans can't see it. I mean, you've got great stuff. Jeez, I don't know many fans that can make the trip to Norway and go see the things you did. So you've got all this great stuff sitting there. You know, make it available. Put it in an interesting format. Intersperse it with interviews and cuts from an interview with Irvin Kershner. He's the most important man on Empire Strikes Back, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And the cool thing about The cool thing about Kersh is that he loves independent filmmakers.
Yes.
He says that the young independent filmmakers are the future of tomorrow.
Exactly.
You know, so I think that's kind of next, you know, and probably won't start that project until, you know, the year after next. What year is it? 2007. So probably 2009 we'll start it in the beginning and wrap it up by the 30-year anniversary.
Right.
You know? So
2010 we could look for a follow-up. From the Mocked production company?
Yes, Mocked Movie Productions would do some kind of Norway Hoth documentary.
You think Court's going to be along for the ride?
Yeah, absolutely.
What about Angry Mike?
No. I mean, really, the only one that would be in the film new would be Irvin Kershner.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's... And probably we'd like to get Gary Kurtz, too.
Sure.
Because he was there. You
absolutely.
Know?
Maybe even a Mark Hamill.
That's what I said
that's
to
what
him.
He was saying, absolutely.
Right on.
You know, so, it looks that idea sounds more refreshing and a little bit more easy on the health, if you will, than The Force Among Us 2
for
now anyway. So.
Plus, you don't have to go back to Norway, so.
No, and I really want to go back to Tunisia, and I want to bring the film crew because, in The Force Among Us, it's all that grainy B-roll stuff, which is cool for what it is, but it's just, man, that just sounds like a big, big project, you know? And it is, it's a lot of work, man. I mean, it sounds easy, and it, you know, it's like, oh, well, I'll just have a pint of Guinness and I'll make a movie, you know? It's a lot harder than that, it really is.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't say. Really?
You know, I'm looking forward to doing more projects, and it's going to be hard to get out of the idea of not doing anything Star Wars related, because I love Star Wars so much, you know.
Yeah.
Even though the Force Among Us project has kind of killed my hobby a little bit, just because I just have my life wrapped up in it, you know, and it like kind of, and you know, we were talking, it's like when you have so much invested into it, and when you just work on it and work on it and work on it, it's like, wow, it's like, it's a lot of work.
And, it's a lot of work, all that working on it.
Yeah, all that working on it is a lot of work, you know? And Dan knows about that, you know?
Absolutely.
You guys put in a lot of work with the Celebration and the Insider, so.
Exhausting.
Dan, can you get too close to something you're a fan of?
I think so. I think, you know, anything you take as a hobby and you turn into a profession or into a business, that, you know, you lose some of that fan innocence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it happened for me on both Star Trek and Star Wars. I wasn't the same fan that I was prior to starting these things, and they were both formed and started, really, in all honesty, out of just my passion for the project. I mean, I started the Star Trek fan club because I was a fan. It wasn't because I thought someday I'd make a living at it. That was the farthest thing from my mind, and so I expected, you know, that, you know, it would just be a labor of love, and it was, but you know, yeah, it wears down on you. You see some things that, you know, you don't necessarily want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And the one good thing I can say about my whole experience is that during the course of my time doing all of these things, all these people that were my heroes growing up, you know, Harrison Ford and William Shatner and on, never once was I let down by any of them. You know, it was nice to know that as I interviewed these people and got closer to them, got to know some of them, that I was never, you know, just devastated that they were jerks or that they were, you know, just horrible people. And so I'm very, very grateful that my childhood heroes have been maintained throughout my life.
And one of those, of course, is Anthony Daniels.
Absolutely.
Which brings us back to pretty much the beginning of the conversation. Today was the grand opening of the Star Wars Where Science Meets Imagination at Chicago's Museum of Science and Industry. And the main reason we went is because I revealed to Anthony Daniels during our interview a couple days ago that you were coming into town, and I just saw him light up. He was thrilled at the prospect of being able to see you. So we went over there this morning, and what was it like reuniting with Anthony?
Oh, it was great. Anthony is such a good friend. He's helped me through some very difficult times in my life, and that time during the Star Wars Celebration was a bonding moment to, you know, we kind of worked as a team to convince Lucasfilm to keep the convention on, and then we worked, you know, as a team to build that convention and make it happen. And Steve Sansweet came out after that for spent a whole week with us, and he was a key element to helping make the Star Wars Celebration one happening event. And so, you know, all of those things together were great. And I'll get to see Anthony again. We're going to the Paris convention here at the end of October, and Anthony's going to be there. So it'll be nice to sit and visit with him again.
Fantastic. Well, guys, it's been a great night. We've had a great time. I got the feeling we could just sit here and talk about Star Wars and anything else for hours and hours.
Well,
but
let's do.
We have to look at Chris. Chris is like, oh, God.
Yeah. I'm dying here.
What I did want to say is, you know, I was saying earlier that nobody ever asked the question, you know, of was the idea of taking away the depressed feeling ever?
Oh, okay.
Ever cured? You know?
Yeah, we were. I was kind of joking around earlier about how you were sitting in that Irish bar and
having
a beer, and you're just bummed that, you know what, Episode 3 came and went, and you've done a lot to celebrate that film opening, is even going out to London where you had a meeting with George Lucas, and you're back home and life is kind of coming back to normal, and all the Star Wars is winding down, and there you are, man, and Court comes over and says, let's make a film, that'll take care of it. Did it handle your depression?
Instead of being depressed, I'm now tired.
You're too tired to
be
depressed.
No, you know, I think it's going to be one of those things where I look back and I mean, I did definitely fill the void for sure of no Star Wars, no new Star Wars movies coming out. I think the void was definitely filled with making this film. But I think it's going to take a long time for it to all soak in. You know,
sure.
I think it's going to be, I think this project is going to be one of those things where I look back on when we celebrate the 30-year anniversary of Return of the Jedi, where The Force Among Us 2 goes to the Redwood Forest. So I have all this planned, man. You're going to come out of that film as a writer, Jimmy.
Of course.
You know?
I'll be there.
This idea of Ben Burtt sitting in the field with his laptop and we're going through the sounds and all that stuff.
That'll be fantastic.
Great ideas.
I can't wait. We'll get Dan involved in it, too.
There you go.
And here's something that's great that just kind of crossed my mind. You know, you're talking about filling the void from no Star Wars, and you do so in a very creative way. You create a movie. Dan, you become attached to this film franchise by launching a massively successful fan club and magazine. And, you know, I'm here, I'm doing this podcast business. I'm trying to throw down.
You're being creative, you know,
we're all doing it. And what are we doing? We're taking Star Wars and we're using it as a creative outlet to get off our, to get something off of our a monkey off of our
absolutely
back.
Absolutely right.
You know, we have something to say, and what brings it out? Star Wars. And what do we understand? Star Wars. We all speak that language.
We were talking about that. You know, I don't think George Lucas set out to bring all these people together.
No.
You know?
Because you could never actually think that that's what you're going
to
do.
Could you imagine if you went into Fox and said, I want to make this movie to bring all these people together?
But what George did do was he set out to make the modern fairy tale. He wanted to give kids a movie to watch because back then it was bleak in the 70s. We had nothing.
Yeah,
we had
absolutely.
The Apple Dumpling Gang.
That's right.
We had Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo.
the worst Snort Hotel.
See, that's a Chicago thing. Our listeners all over the world, they're not going to know Giggle Snort Hotel, a bunch of weird dragon puppets running a hotel. That was a Chicago.
I don't think I
want to
know what that was all about. That sounds too much like Teletubbies.
Don't drink the brown milk.
Yeah, but see what we had to deal with before Star Wars.
Yeah, no kidding.
It was bleak, folks.
But the coolest thing is that we're still creating. Like George Lucas had achieved the ultimate goal because he's influenced all these people
to
come together and be creative. And that's more important, I think, than making a successful film.
You know what's even more amazing is that he gets to have that feeling that you just described of bringing all these people together and getting, and he got rich doing it at the same time.
Right.
Filthy rich.
Man, I mean, can you best of both worlds. How can you imagine?
And again, I don't think that when Lucas was making episode 4 that he was out to get rich.
Oh, well, no.
You know, I don't think you can be. You know, when you took over the fan club, you weren't out to get rich.
Oh, no.
You can't.
And I didn't.
But there it is. It's Star Wars.
I wasn't out to get rich, and I'm still thousands in the hole, you know?
From the very beginning, Star Wars gave one guy, he needed an outlet to let loose all of his creative energy and
absolutely.
Force.
Yeah. Yes.
And here we are following in his footsteps,
taking our
own roads, you know, via the thing he laid out there for us.
Which is more important than getting rich, you know? Absolutely. And you know what? And you can't get into something thinking you're going to make $1 million.
No.
Because that's when it doesn't
happen. That's when it fails. Yeah.
If you have the labor of love to do it, you know, that Lucas had, that you had, you know, that we had, it's like something good happens,
That's exactly it.
Yeah, let's face it. George doesn't know what hit him.
No.
He still, 30 years later, doesn't know what hit him.
Yeah, he's like, I wish I had figured out what it was that I did so I could do it again.
But, you know, to his credit, he took a lot of his earnings and he put it right back into the process
and he took a
of
risk
making
on
films.
It.
He is
risk.
The most successful independent filmmaker out there. I mean, he's totally
hands down, he's got to be.
And I love his view on Hollywood. He hates it. You know, and he does what he wants to do. And that's why Hollywood doesn't reward
him very often.
No. I mean, he's totally underrated by Hollywood, you know.
Well, this has been great, guys. I mean, really, we could go on forever, but we do have to wrap it up.
We are. Tomorrow.
And I got to go to bed.
Right. And of course, Dan, you are also in town to appear at the Creation Con.
That's right.
And that's been a great success for you. That was going on all day today. And Chris, you're out there as well.
Yeah, so, Dan's doing a Star Trek talk tomorrow. When was the last time you did that?
Oh, geez. Don't even ask me.
A Star Trek panel.
I don't think you want to promote it because I don't even know what I'm going to talk about.
Wrong podcast.
Yeah,
anyway,
exactly. Right.
So,
yeah.
Thank you so much. It was so great to hang with you guys.
To the German listeners out there, Morgen die Macht mit dir sein.
For TheForce.net and RebelScum.com, I'm Jimmy Mag.
May the Force be with you, bro.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of TheForce.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.